It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. What a beautiful morning out there. Thanks for spending part of it with us. Coming up on the program, just a moment here, we're going to give you a little taste of spring here. We're going to talk about plants, and specifically, we're going to talk about our heroes, the weeds, this morning. We're also going to take your phone calls throughout the program. You can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. A couple of programming notes for you coming up on the program tomorrow. We'll be joined by the Auditor of Accounts, Doug Hoffer, who's been raising a lot of questions of late, including should the state of Vermont continue to be in the liquor distribution business? Are the ski areas paying enough for their leases? And he's also now gotten into this question about printing the prices of some surgical procedures, which actually a couple of you have mentioned, too, and some interesting pushback on that idea from the head of the Greenmount Care Board. So we could talk about all that and more coming up on the program today. But we're going to get right down to business this morning. Let me give you the phone numbers first. 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Joining us live on the line this morning, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Katrina Blair. She is the author of The Wild Wisdom of Weeds, 13 Essential Plants for Human Survival. Katrina first started studying wild plants when she was in her teens. We're going to find out about that adventure. She later wrote a book called The Wild Edible and Medicinal Plants of the San Juan Mountains for her senior project at Colorado College, graduated with a degree in biology. I'm imagining maybe even summa cum laude. She also went to the John F. Kennedy School in California, where she studied holistic health education, and she founded in 1998 the Turtle Lake Refuge, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to celebrate the connection between personal health and wildlands. Katrina, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm great. Yeah, it's really good to be here in Vermont.
What happened when you were in your teens that piqued your interest in plants?
Well, actually, it all started when I was, it started before I was born, actually, but when I was 11, I was floating on this air mattress on a lake with my cousins and brother. And they all turned back to go have lunch, but I found myself paddling on the lake all the way to the far end of the shore and around the corner and disappeared from sight. And then I crawled through the muck to get to shore and sat amongst these plants and got totally euphoric. This huge amount of energy just went through me, and the plants communicated that they said, you're home, and you're going to live your life with us. And I found, like, after that moment, I just wanted to learn everything I could about the wild plants. And then immediately after high school, I decided to camp out for a summer to just eat all wild edible plants and learn as much as I could.
Mm-hmm. What were you referring to? Did you think you've had a past life experience?
I don't know. It was a present moment experience where I just got euphoric by the energy of the plants and got really inspired.
Now, most of us don't have that kind of reaction when we're sitting among weeds. Why do you think that happened to you?
I think I was just so... It wasn't weeds at that moment. At that moment, it was just all the wild plants near the lake. You know, I've gone back there just to sit down there again and see who inspired me so much when I was here before. It was just sort of the whole ecosystem was so in harmony and really inspired me in that moment.
Wow. So talk about how you took it from there to where you are today.
So... after, you know, a degree in biology, I was lucky enough to have a professor in college who let me do independent studies. So I would go to the woods for a month, study the wild plants, and then come back and write a paper. So I did several of those. And then when I came back after graduate school to start Turtle Lake Refuge, I realized that there's just so many plants that are growing all around us with such an incredible resource of nutrition and medicine and use that we overlook at best, but at worst, we actually try to even eradicate them or try to get rid of them. And so that was the motivation to share their values to help shift our human population from the eradication practices of spraying herbicides or pesticides on these plants.
Mm-hmm. You refer to weeds at different points in the book as friends, heroes, words that I don't think we typically hear in connection with weeds.
That's right, and I actually do feel very clearly that these plants are the 21st century heroes of this time, because their nature is to regenerate our disturbance. So as humans live and do what we do, we're the best disturbers of soil on the planet, as we've noticed. And these wild weeds come in and set their tap roots. You know, they plant their seeds and develop these amazing tap roots that break up the compaction, the compacted soil that we trampled, and aerate the soil so earthworms and microorganisms can start living in there again. And then they pull up minerals from the earth, and then every year they get composted back onto the topsoil, recreating fertility. So it's these plants that actually regenerate the earth from our disturbance. And then in the meantime, while they're growing, they're incredible food and medicine for us, no matter where we live in the world.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to what the 13 are actually here, but give me a view, generally speaking, what are the medicinal values, the medicinal upside of these weeds?
Well, we could think of it as when we eat food as our medicine, we actually don't need medicine. So they're incredible preventative health benefits. And the three main things that some of these plants do, they do a lot of things individually, but collectively, when we eat the greens, we have an incredible source of fresh chlorophyll. And chlorophyll chelates with toxins which means it binds to toxins in our body and eliminates it. So our whole body gets more efficient. So there's this chlorophyll action that oxygenates and circulates our blood and really doesn't allow for germs which live in stagnant environments. It doesn't allow for germs environments to live. So by oxygenating and circulating our body through the chlorophyll, that's an incredible nutrient that benefits us. And then they do have these deep tap roots that pull up such a range of minerals, the whole spectrum, like rainbow trace minerals that we don't get through conventionally grown foods.
Uh-huh.
Partly is because a lot of the conventionally grown foods, even organic foods, are great, but a lot of times they only have 1 year to grow, so they're annuals, where these wild weeds are often perennials, and every year they get deeper and deeper and more connected and pull up more nutrients that we don't have access to
mm-hmm.
in regular eating. And then, so we have the chlorophyll, the minerals, and then enzymes, and just the enzymes from eating fresh plants benefits the body so much.
Mm-hmm. Can you name these 13 off the top of your head without looking?
I can. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so there's dandelion and dock, curly dock or yellow dock. There's knotweed, and this is the Japanese knotweed is a really good medicine, the root, but there's so many other varieties of knotweed. There's a prostrate, like a low-growing knotweed that grows all around the world that's very edible. It's like a wild buckwheat. And then there's purslane and plantain. There's mallow and mustard. There's thistle and grass and clover and chickweed. And let's see. Who am I forgetting? Oh, lamb's quarter and amaranth.
Okay. All right. I wasn't counting, but I think you're pretty close.
That was 13. Yeah, I was counting.
I have to admit, I would say maybe I've eaten a quarter of them and maybe heard a half of them.
Okay, that's good.
Really? I didn't think that was very good.
Well, actually, I think that's great. Yeah, not everybody's even eaten them at all, so I think that's fantastic.
Well, I mean, it doesn't seem... Are all of these available in this part of the world?
It is. They are. All of them are available right here in Vermont.
Okay, all right. Tell me more about the Turtle Lake Refuge. How did you start that, and why did you start it?
So that started actually as a project to preserve 60 acres of wetlands that was right near where I live, right near Turtle Lake. And we started by raising some money through serving these wild food lunches, and we thought that by raising some money we could buy the land and create a conservation easement or some preservation. So we had this three-wheel bicycle, and we would load up four-course meal of wild foods and all the dishes and plates and and we would pedal it down to the community building 5 blocks away where we would store our tables and chairs, and we would turn into a makeshift cafe. And we did this for a year, twice a week, at $5 a plate. And after that year, we didn't exactly raise $500,000 to buy the land, but enough awareness was raised that a neighbor ended up purchasing the land and then putting it into a conservation easement.
Okay.
And so that original mission was accomplished, and perhaps we had a little element in that happening. We met with the owner and encouraged it, and we offered to pay for the stewardship fee, but he did it independently, that family, which is great. But then we realized our mission was far beyond just one piece of land. It was really protecting wild places all across the world. So we continued, and that was 16 years ago. We're still serving lunch twice a week. We no longer have to pedal it down to the community building. We actually have our own cafe now where people can come to us. It makes it much easier to do dishes.
Are you still charging $5? Have you upped the price a little bit?
Well, it's a suggested donation, so we don't actually set a price. And people generally donate between $10 and $15 for lunch.
Uh-huh.
And it's a gourmet 4-course meal with soup, salad, main entree, dessert, and a drink.
Uh-huh. That thistle soup, I'll bet, is awesome, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a fun culinary adventure.
We're talking with Katrina Blair. She's the author of The Wild Wisdom of Weeds, 13 Essential Plants for Human Survival. You can join us at 244-1777 is our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. At one point, you write that a dandelion that you find between the crack in a city sidewalk can have more nutrition than the salad you get at a store.
You know, and there's something to that, and of course, I've never done a scientific study to prove that, but there have been many, many studies on the nutrition composition of, let's say, commercially grown foods, standard foods bought in the store versus a wild food. And the wild seed is incredibly resilient. It hasn't been manipulated or hybrid on any level by humans, but it's evolved with nature to be resilient and able to thrive even in inhospitable conditions such as a sidewalk crack. It still knows how to get the nutrients it needs to burst with life force. And so it's interesting when we eat something that has that much vitality to it and resilience to it versus something that has been tended and babied, and it's almost we get a different nature of our own being. It teaches us how to survive in this changing climate.
Mm-hmm.
And the nutritional composition, you know, if you compare, sometimes it's 60 even to 80% more minerals or vitamins, such as calcium or iron or magnesium. Just some of the basic minerals are found in concentrations in these wild plants.
Wow.
Over vegetables that we buy.
Yeah.
And the freshness, especially if you harvest it immediately and use it that day or that hour or that minute, you're getting it at the peak of nutrition.
Mm-hmm. I read a book recently where the author made the case that we've basically over time made fruits and vegetables so much less nutritious, you know, that we've turned corn into basically candy.
Yes. I think when humans hybridize and even, of course, to the degree, extreme degree of genetically modify, we're altering that native integrity of the seed to a degree. It's like it's bigger and sweeter, and maybe stores or handles easier, but the nutrition isn't as high. It gets diminished as we do these changes.
Let's go to Barry Pete. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark, and good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
I have two questions for her. The first question is, many of the plants that the 13 that you named out, grow beside the road and such. What kind of concern should people have because of roadside contamination in those plants? And also, are you familiar with the writings of a Nancy Rietze from Maine, who's an herbalist? I'll get off the line and wait for your answer.
All right.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Pete.
Great. Well, thank you for asking that question. That's a really important question, so I'm really happy you brought that up. It's very wise to harvest your wild foods in the cleanest environment as possible. So if you have the options of going way off the road, definitely do that, because the road chemicals from the cars, pollution, and all of that do get onto those side plants, and it's not ideal to eat those plants. However, I was in New York City harvesting wild foods in Central Park, and there's pollution everywhere. You know, there's cars going 24 hours a day, and I found actually intuitively that I wanted to eat those plants that were growing there because they had learned how to adapt in that pollution environment, and I was also living there. And so to eat the plants helped me adapt to being in that environment. And also the greens, the chlorophyll, does help detox those chemicals also. So I felt like in certain situations, it might make sense to eat what's around you. But if you have the choice, yeah, go for the cleanest environment possible and be mindful, really observant to the environmental situations around, such as spraying practices of the city or county or neighbors, that sort of thing. And then your second question is, I haven't heard of that herbalist, and I'm very interested in learning more about her work in Maine. So thank you for mentioning that. I'll hope to maybe look her up.
244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to North Faceton. Cindy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a question for you in regards to preserving these things, because I love the idea of the, you know, wild foods, and I also agree with you, you just kind of intuitively know, you can feel, or I can feel it. And I wonder, it's, you know, we go through so many months of things that aren't growing, how can you preserve these things, dry them, or what would be a good way to be able to have them in the wintertime? And also, I know I've harvested nettles before, early in the spring, for making a tea when they're still little, when they're small, like 6 inches maybe or so. And also milkweed. I've had that, too. It's delicious. So anyway, as far as the preserving, what do you suggest? How can I do that?
All right. Thanks, Cindy. Katrina?
Yeah, Cindy, thanks for asking that question, too. It's a really important one, especially here in Vermont when we're buried in snow right now. So what I do, I'm from Colorado, but we also have deep winters of snow and we're similar in the seasons of when things grow. And what I do I start doing this as soon as the plants start coming out. So because every plant has a little bit of a different season. So let's say there's a big lamb's quarter crop that's coming up in your yard or your garden or your field. And what I do is I harvest it when it's at its prime, if I want the leaves. So I'll harvest the greens, and then I'll dry them. I usually use, it's a little drier in Colorado, but you can use a dehydrator or just dry it in air. But once they're dry, crispy dry, then I grind it up into a powder, and I'll add different wild greens when they're at their peak. So I'll harvest the dandelions when they're at their nice, juicy stage in the early spring or later in the fall when they come back. And I'll add these greens together and make a green, I call it a wild green superfood powder. And it's a way to get my wild foods in the wintertime. So I'll put a half a teaspoon of this in my juice or smoothie or water, and I travel with it when I'm going away because it helps me stay connected to my place, my regional earth. And I find it's even more valuable than like a superfood green powder that's made somewhere else by more commercial practices. You know, these greens you had a relationship with directly, and I always say thank you to the plants, and that connection is actually hard to always talk about, but it's very present, the relationship that we have with the plants around our home. So that's one thing with the greens, and then I harvest the roots when they're at their prime, and I either dry them for tea or for a chai, or you can even freeze the roots if you wanted to use them as soup later in the winter. And then I definitely harvest the seeds. So the amaranth seeds are incredibly packed with protein, and I do that in the fall. And I make a big deal of it. I use gloves and invite friends out because it's a labor-intensive project, but it's very worth it because they are so dense in nutrition that a little goes a long way. And I'll do that the same with the lamb's quarter seeds, which ends up being a kind of quinoa and can be cooked and utilized the same way. So depending on the season, I do store things. I also make sauerkrauts and cultured root foods, whether it's kimchi or sauerkraut or pickled, and that's another way to store them.
Hmm. Does that super food juice thing that you do, does it taste like really nasty?
I usually add a little dried mint also, so it's delicious.
Okay.
I wish I could give you some right now.
All right. And the what do you do with the amaranth seeds?
So the amaranth seeds, they're the ones that grow out here. They're sometimes called pigweed, and sometimes they come dark black. They come in different colors, but they're tiny, and you can cook them, or you can, I like to grind them in a coffee grinder into a powder and then make a cereal, or I'll add hot water, and you know, you could add anything else you want to your cereal. But even just sprinkling them in, I make a flaxseed cracker, and it's part flax seeds that have been soaked and part amaranth seeds.
Okay.
And I'll grind that up with some carrots and spices and then dehydrate them in crackers.
Okay.
And those are a few recipes, but you can put them in bread, anything.
Is there like a magic recipe where you can get all 13 into one, like, you know, cookie or something?
Absolutely. Your creativity is unlimited.
Right.
You know, you could make your wild green 13 powder and then put that in cookies. It's a good way to get nutrients into kids that might not think green powder is so fun.
You know, you had this one paragraph in here that I'm going to read that just I thought was really great, that kind of, you know, talked about weeds, but I sort of interpreted it as a little bit larger than weeds, shall we say. You call it the path of least effort. Actually, maybe I'll ask you to just explain what the concept is.
Oh, okay. I was kind of looking forward to your reading.
All right. Do you want me to read it?
Maybe, yeah.
All right.
Why don't I
read it and then you explain it, all right?
Okay,
how about that? The path of least effort. Often the best way to find the balance of equilibrium is to do less or even nothing. Nature will do the work for us and likely perform a better job. When weeds are viewed as a nuisance, it requires extensive effort, time, money, and resources to attempt to keep them at bay. But if we capitalize on the natural succession of weeds, we benefit from the least amount of work and greatest amount of return. Fighting nature to try and create a different vegetative landscape than the wild ecosystem is hard work. Making the lawn perfect, the edges empty, and the walkways sterile and pristine may be expending energy that is out of accord with nature. A more lucrative approach is to capitalize on the natural succession of weeds and benefit from the abundance of nature's efficiency. That was pretty nice. So it is more than about just weeds, isn't it?
It really is. It's a way of thinking. It's about relating to our environment. And I think when we harmonize, and that there is something about least effort, like the path of least resistance. It's almost, it conserves our own energy. It allows nature to do its job. And it's interesting because nature sends these weeds to clean up our disturbance. And it's going to happen every time. So even if we use herbicides to try to get rid of them, that's another form of disturbance. So the nature's going to like, okay, let's start over, and we'll send the weeds again, which are like the very first succession plants often after disturbance. But if we just let them be, then nature's going to start refertilizing that soil, regenerating, and then those weeds are going to go away because there's been stability developed on the land. And then it'll make way for the next plant who needs a little more fertility. And eventually it goes into a climax ecosystem again, which we might call native. But natives can't live in major change, at least in that same way. So there's a lot of patience that's required of us humans to allow that process.
Mm-hmm. And just that whole general idea that we seem to just fight everything and instead of, and it's not laziness if you sort of let the river flow a little bit. You know, you don't have to change everything.
Yeah, it's not laziness. It's actually wisdom. It's a conservative wisdom.
Let's go to Stratford. Tim, good morning. How's it going?
Good. Hey, this is a great show. I'd like to ask a question on behalf of my daughter who's taking an online course with the Community College of Vermont up here, and the course, one of the courses is a course in biology of some sort where they are asking her to locate a place for her to go and observe every day or every day or two and observe what's going on there with the animals and what grows there. And I'm not really sure of the details, but I think you get the idea probably.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, in a rural place in Stratford, Vermont, and you know, there's a field nearby with a stream running by, or they have, you know, her house has a nice big field, and I'm wondering if, or then there's also forest, woods. So I'm wondering what you might suggest in the way of a place. What might be a good place for her to stake out as her observation place?
Wow, what a great question.
Yeah. Should I answer it now?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so it sounds like that what she might be doing is called finding a sit spot, which is, I do that sometimes too, where I go to the same place to just observe and take in and notice, and it's really a deep learning that can happen by watching all the birds and the animals who come and go and taking notes of the plants, especially season after season. Like if she is going to continue to hold that one place, and then to notice when the plants start to flower and when they go to seed and what insects are on there. I'm assuming that's what she's doing, and then observing all those recordings and noticings. And really, where? It sounds like she has the perfect place by the creek in the woods, maybe on the edge. There's a lot more activity happening on the edges of
right.
the ecosystem. So if there's a part forest, part open meadow, and a part stream, that would be the ideal place where the most activity is going to happen.
Yeah, that's great. Good. Well, I'll pass that along. Thank you. One other question, just quickly. Okay, so it's 15 below, and if you haven't gathered your dried your, you know,
weeds,
herbs, whatever. Can you go outside and can you rip off some white birch bark? Or I mean, what can you eat if you're going around in the woods today?
Yeah, this is a great. I love that you asked that, because yesterday we were heading up to Shelburne Farms to do a lecture last night. But along the way, there were so many wild foods poking up in the snow. So there was the staghorn sumac berries that overwinter.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was exciting, because all of those would make the most fabulous lemonade right now. And they're still red and pink and delicious, full of vitamin C.
Yeah.
And then there's the cattails. There was tons of cattails. And even the cattail hot dog, which is just the little, you know, packed seed heads. I love to make a cattail cookie, or you can use it as flour, but I grind the cattail fluff. I put that in the Cuisinart, and then I put oats on top of it and grind it up, and it makes a fluffy flour that then I use to make my cookies with.
Cool.
So that's really great food. And then even the thistle seeds that are still poking out, I saw some of those. And those seeds, if they're still in the flour casings, you can grind up those seeds to make milk, or even grind it up and add it to your cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the amaranth seeds are often still contained in their little prickly stalks that are all dead, but the seeds are still alive and full of nutrition and vitality. So, yeah, you can't really get down to greens much, or you can't get down to roots because it's too frozen, but there's a lot of old seeds or flowers that, I mean, not flowers, but berries that overwinter.
What about the needles on the conifers?
Yeah, and all the evergreens. Doesn't matter if it's pine or spruce or fir, they're all edible. And they're a very good source of vitamin C, and taste lemony, kind of like Christmas.
Yeah.
And you can juice them, like put them in a blender with water and make a pine needle lemonade, or you can make tea.
Cool. Well, thank you. That's great.
You're welcome. I really think
this is a great show.
Thanks for your call, Tim.
Okay.
I guess it was a little premature getting rid of the Christmas tree, huh?
Wow. A little after, that's right.
Are all of these, do they lose anything by being cooked?
You know, anytime we cook something, it does alter the proteins and the composition, and all the enzymes get destroyed. So, yes, we lose a certain amount of efficiency when we cook foods, and that's just something that I observe in nature, that all the other wild animals, they eat exclusively wild, local, and fresh living,
mm-hmm.
raw, primarily. And so I imitate them as often as I can, and I find that my own energy and efficiency gets heightened when I do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, I think there's no one right way. However, I do notice that the more I imitate nature, the more efficient and in harmony I am.
All right. Well, the animals aren't getting at their coffee grinder either. Does grinding make a difference?
No, I think grinding. I mean, every time we process anything, yes, it has an impact. So I like to take walkabouts where I just eat hand to mouth, more like a wild animal, for days and days on end. And that's actually when my energy is at the peak of my life each year. But in general, like especially if I'm making a gourmet meal or the lunches or just sharing food with people, it's fun and social to prepare foods by adding spices and dicing and grinding and altering. So I think, you know, everything has energy coming in one form and then trade off for another form. So,
mm-hmm. Do you spend extended periods of time in the woods every year?
I do, yes.
Like how long?
Well, it'll be like a week to 10 days where I'll go on wild food journeys where I don't bring food and I just eat the wild. And I've, for the last 7 or 8 years, I've been hiking from my hometown, which is in Durango, Colorado, to Telluride, Colorado, which is about a 100-mile journey over 7 high mountain passes, really high, like 13,000 feet.
Wow.
High. So it's a journey. It's definitely not a straight walkabout. It's a lot of terrain. But I choose to go during the height of berry season, and there's an abundance of food out there.
And you can really sustain yourself.
Yeah, I definitely can. I do notice that every time I have a transition where when I'm leaving, like, civilization and the luxury of, you know, that, and going into the wild, there's about a 3-day period where I have to let go and drop, and I have low energy for a few days. It's like a transitional detox in a way. And then after that 3 days, that's when I've arrived, and I feel in harmony with the frequency around me, and that's when my energy just starts climbing and climbing, and then it just doesn't stop.
Wow. I saw this documentary a couple of months back about a guy who lives in the rainforest. I'm trying to remember where it was. I think it was in Central America or North South America, maybe. And it just was amazing. You know, his argument is that some people, that's just where they're meant to be. And he would just, you know, you want to talk about sitting with nature. He would sit and the animals would come so close to him. I mean, it was just remarkable. And they weren't afraid of him at all.
Yeah.
And he wasn't afraid of them either.
It's almost like when we're in one place long enough, we start to meld into each other.
Do you have that same experience? Do you feel, you know, not threatened by the animals?
I do, actually. I mean, I'm only there for a journey, and I am moving through, at least in the last many years. The summer that I camped out for the whole summer, I did stay put a lot of the time. But I do find, this last journey, I met a bear, and this young bear was loping towards me, and I saw him before he smelled me. But as soon as he saw me, he just turned around and went the other direction.
Uh-huh.
And so I think everyone's just a little bit looking out for each other. But there were other times where a fox just followed me for probably, you know, hours, many miles, and stayed about 10 to 15, 20 feet away from me. But there was a kinship that happened during that time also.
Let's go to Montpelier. Hi, Eudora. Good morning.
Good morning, Katrina. Have you ever tried Vermont spruce gum? I don't know if you have it where you come from. Thank you.
Okay. Eudora wanted to know if you've ever tried Vermont spruce gum.
You know, I do make pine gum. I've never tried Vermont spruce gum. That sounds quite amazing, but I do make my own sap gum when I'm hiking and when I'm out in the woods, and I do try different saps from different trees, and I found that the ponderosa pine is probably my favorite, but I'm looking forward to trying the Vermont spruce.
Let's go to Greensboro. Hi, David. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to your guests. I'd like some contact information. First of all, the name of the book again that she's just written.
The Wild Wisdom of Weeds.
The WW of Weeds.
Yeah.
And her name is?
Katrina Blair.
With a K. Katrina. B-L-A-R. B-L-A-I-R?
Correct.
And where does she live?
She lives in Colorado. Do you feel like we're talking about you and you're not here, Katrina?
Yeah, I live in Durango, Colorado.
Yeah, I did that on purpose because I wanted to know if she was going to be making contact with a pharmacologist I know who teaches a short summer course at the University of Vermont. It doesn't sound like she's going to be here. His name is Wendell, D-E-L-L, Combest, C-O-M-B-E-S-T. He's a professor of pharmacology at Shenandoah University in Virginia.
Oh.
And he does a workshop for nurses, essentially, at UVM. And that explores culinary and medicinal herbs, dosages, compounding, poultices, plasters, oil tinctures, infusions, and the therapeutic use of plant essential oils. So he's dealing with weeds, as you do, but in an entirely different way. And so I thought you'd make a good pair to get together and discuss the way life goes.
That sounds amazing. I'm actually teaching tonight at the University of Vermont Medical Center at 6 o'clock. And I don't know if he'll be here now, but...
He won't. He's in Virginia.
He's in Virginia.
But I'm going to give him your book. I'm going to send it to him.
Great.
Where is it? Is it available locally, Mark?
Yes.
Published by Chelsea Green out of White River Junction.
Fine.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I mean, I've seen it here at Breedside and a couple of other places, too.
Well, thanks for being on, Katrina.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I look forward to meeting your friend.
Thanks for your call, David. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Just a couple of more questions for you. Are there any of these that we're getting without really even knowing?
That's a great question. You know, I don't think we are. We can buy dandelions in the... I bought some dandelions yesterday in the Burlington Co-op, the city market. That was fun.
Right.
But primarily, we have to actually go and choose those to put them into our diet because they are excluded a lot from our diet.
Because, I mean, we're not getting clover sort of, you know, without really even trying, I guess would be a better way to describe it.
Actually, I mean, we're getting the pollen. In the springtime, we're breathing the pollen from a lot of these plants, so we're getting it that way. And probably we are getting some of their, of course we're getting some of their energetic relationship just because they live near us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having an influence in the soil and our gardens and our homes and really to us too because we're not separate. So yes, on subtle levels we are.
Well, let me ask the question another way. I know we probably don't have Erymantha seeds in tater tots, for example, but are there... You know, is there mustard? Are there one of these other 12 or 13 here that are in something that we frequently have and we may not even know that it's in there?
Okay, I love that. Yeah. Well, mallow is marshmallow. Marshmallow is a mallow. And it used to be in the white puffy marshmallows. It's not anymore. But so we used to get some of the original plants. But a lot of times they've been waned out for easier commercial production. And with mustard, yeah, I bet we get mustard a lot. There's so many different kinds of mustards all across the world, and they're all edible. Even the cabbage and broccoli and radishes are in the mustard family, so we're certainly getting a good amount of those.
Okay. Is there actually any mallow in marshmallow?
Not anymore. There used to be. I make a local one. There's a recipe in the book. There's over 100 recipes in the Wild Wisdom of Weeds book, and the wild mallow recipes in there, marshmallow.
I was thinking Rice Krispie treats right off the top of my
head.
Let's go to Middlesex. Chuck, good morning. How's it going?
Yeah. Hey, Mark, and good morning, Katrina. This is fascinating. And you kind of nailed the... Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I had a weird sound on the line. That happened a lot when I was doing this, too. Well, you kind of nailed the mallow for me, because we have... It's the plant with the pink and yellow... or pink and white flowers?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what part of that do you eat again?
The whole entire plant is edible, and it's really fun because you can pull the entire thing out, root and all, wash it up, and chop it, and then put it into like a glass of water, fill it up, and let it sit for some hours, and the whole thing will start to turn into a jello, not quite that thick, but almost like egg white.
Sort of like an aspic?
Yeah, and so you can add that to soups to thicken it or desserts or even just drink it, and you'll get the natural... soothing and of all your inner organs.
Because they grow on the edges of my property here.
Oh,
we always wonder what to do with them, and my wife wants to harvest them. We do plantain and clover and dandelion greens. And the thing all these people, like my brother-in-law down in Florida, he goes nuts about dollar weeds in his lawn. And everybody's telling me, because I got all these things growing in my lawn, you know, why don't you kill those weeds? I was like, I don't... need that much labor. I, you know, I'll just mow it. I'll just mow it as long as it's green and it's not 6 inches high.
That's right.
So, and, you know, we've got grubs and moles and all this stuff, and I never put any of that Grubex stuff down because I've got dogs, and
yeah.
I don't want them, you know, nobody has ever been able to explain to me, you know, trying to put that down if it's healthy for it to get it on the dog's paws, so I don't.
Right.
I just mow everything. My big question, though, is Japanese knotweed.
Yeah.
Which, you said it's just the roots? Because I've got a bunch of this stuff. I did kill it next to my garage, which is a wooden siding, and I don't want that kind of concentration of greenery right next to the building. But I got a bunch of this stuff. I got a friend who's a golf course superintendent who came over here and told me the herbicide bomb that he uses on the golf course. And I don't want to do that either. But I do, you know, what part of the Japanese, we call it Japanese bamboo, I guess, is what
yeah,
she calls
right.
it. It's just the roots of that, or,
no,
or
there's
you
more.
Can't just cut. You can't just cut up the leaves in a salad or anything because there's a lot of them.
Yeah. So Japanese knotweed is an incredible resource for this area. So certainly the roots are used to help get rid of Lyme's disease, and there's
oh.
a great Dr. Timothy Lee Scott, who is in Brattleboro, Vermont, who really helps people move past that illness with knotweed. But then there's another great herbalist. His name is Russ Cohen, and he was at the NOFA conference in New Hampshire on Saturday, and he uses the young shoots just like asparagus, and he makes a
right.
knotweed
okay. I think
strawberry.
I heard something about that.
Yes,
but
knotweed
not
strawberry.
The leaves, huh?
A knotweed strawberry pie. And so
with the shoots?
With the young shoots. Yeah,
right.
They're sour and delicious, like the stalks. When they before they go too old.
Before they get woody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you could cut it back and then let it shoot up again and then harvest it and make pies for all your neighbors.
Well, she's the baker. I do everything else in the kitchen.
Oh, good. You just have to show
up. I'll tell her about that.
Yeah, you can just clean up, Chuck. That's
exactly. Now, this stuff is just pervasive. I mean, it just grows and grows and grows. I just try to keep it away from the garage at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, and then compost it because it will definitely add nutrients and material to your compost.
Oh, yeah, we're big composters.
Great.
Definitely.
Thank you for your call, Chuck. I appreciate it.
Fascinating guest, Mark.
So, Katrina, are any of these, I don't want you to, you know, pick among your children here or anything, but are any of these more of a priority than others?
let's see. Well, I've learned a lot from the thistle plant. I use thistle because it's so pokey and sometimes considered the bane of society. And I find the thistle root is our best seller. We make a thistle root chai tea at the farmer's market every Saturday, and it sells out every Saturday, and I appreciate it so much because, you know, it's often sprayed with herbicides, which are really toxic to the liver. But the beautiful thing about thistle is that it helps regenerate liver cells. So it's the exact complement to what we need to, like, rebuild our health after using toxic sprays. And so I find that by feeding people the thistle plant, and all the thistle plant is edible, so the stalk is better than celery. You can peel it and eat it, and it's really sweet and juicy. And then the flowers are sweet and make a great chewing gum, and then the seeds can be used to make milk or ground up into flour. And then, of course, the roots are a vegetable or a good medicine. But by eating the thistle and any of its parts, and the greens, I make a green juice, a really delicious green lemonade, and then I strain out the prickles. And when we ingest any of these parts of the thistle actually starts to teach us from the inside out how to be resilient, how to interface with this changing climate and world. And so there's so much information that starts to come just by ingesting it.
All right, you got to help me with this. What do you mean by this? What do you mean that the thistle's teaching you from the inside out?
So because we are what we eat, when we put thistle into our body, it starts honestly becoming part of us on a cellular matrix. Like we start to use it to build our cells and our muscles, and we honestly start to feel and think a little more like a thistle plant. and actually that's a really good thing because the thistle is so resilient to how to survive here on Earth today, anywhere in the world.
Wow. Okay. How often do you drink thistle tea? Can you do this once a week and get some benefit out of it? Do you do it every day? What do you do?
Yeah, I don't do anything every day. And the reason I think it's a really great practice to to keep things diverse, move things around so we don't get into one habit, because our body gets used to something and then we might actually get resistant to it. So do it periodically, definitely once a week. Sometimes I'll do it every day for a period of time, but then the thistle plant will change. You know, it'll go to seed, and then I'll move on to another plant. So just as we would follow the seasons of nature, the plants come and go in their prime, and we would use them only for a period of time and then move on to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a healthy practice.
Hmm. We missed your promoting your event last night at Shelburne Farms. Are there any other places you're going to be that you can tell us about?
Yeah, tonight I'll be speaking at the University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington. And that'll be from 6 to 8 tonight. Okay. And you can go on my website, which is turtlelakerefuge.org, and there's a schedule of my teaching. And I'll be teaching in Vermont, in Brattleboro on Wednesday the 11th, and then again in White River Junction on February 13th.
Okay.
And then in different places, I'll be heading down to Pennsylvania and then up into Massachusetts, so I'll be in the area for a little while.
Okay. Let me grab one more call here. Celia, good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm fine. This is a wonderful show. I'm really enjoying it, but I had one question about the thistles. There are many varieties, the bull thistle, and then I have a lot of other ones in my yard. I wondered if all of the thistles were good.
Great question. Yes, all the thistles are edible, and they each taste a little different, and I have my favorites. My favorite probably is a musk thistle back in Colorado, but we also have Canadian thistle and all these other kinds. And so what I recommend is that you taste them and you play around with making a green juice one day with one and then trying it again with another one. And I really encourage that. You are very brilliant, your body and your tongue and your intuition. And so really trust. If you don't like it, then you don't have to force yourself to eat it. And it's a really good idea to go slow. So I make my green juices dilute, where I'll pick the thistle greens and maybe a handful or two and put it in a blender. And then I fill the blender full of water, and I might add an apple or a lemon. And I'll blend it up and then strain out the prickles and then drink the juice. But even before that, it's a good idea to just taste the plant directly right where you pick it, just so you can get a sense of how strong and how potent is this plant, and do I really want to make a lot of juice with it, or just a little nibble is enough?
Hmm.
Oh, very good. That sounds like what I do with most foods.
Yes, good idea.
It doesn't sound good or doesn't set good, then I don't eat it.
Yes, and that's the smart way to keep going.
Well, thank you. And I do have one more question that occurred to me. Chaga.
Yes.
Is that something that is really good to drink every day, make a tea and drink every day?
Chaga is amazing, but it's very potent. And so, again, I don't recommend it every day. I recommend it for a little while and then take a break, and for a little while more and take a break. And with chaga, you can, you know, you can use a little bit to make a tea, but then you can keep boiling that tea for sometimes a week.
Yeah.
And continue to get the goodness from it. So you might do that for a week and then take a break.
Mm. Okay.
And then try again. We found some chaga yesterday on a yellow birch, and my friend who I was skiing with, his name is Stuart, and he's deaf. And he climbed the tree with his ski boots just like a monkey.
Oh, my goodness.
All the way up and knocked on the chaga. But it didn't want to come with us, so he slid all the way down.
Oh, dear, without the chaga.
Without the chaga. He was very strong.
Well, I thank you so much, and enjoy your trip in Vermont.
Oh, thank you so much.
Katrina, last question I have for you. Invasive plants, well, things like wild mustard, are these a danger?
No. Okay, so, yeah, it's interesting, and that's where one of my intentions for the book is to relax our fear around the weeds taking over and sort of the nature of like oh, scary, they're going to, you know, wipe us out or something. And really, we don't have to worry about that. The nature is very smart. And for us, of course, we can clear an area, you know, manually or whatever if we feel like we need to or we want something different to grow there. But the plants are doing their work. And if we can look at them as a resource, so to harvest them instead of just get rid of them, that just makes us richer.
Mm-hmm.
So look deeper into their resource or their value or their worth, and then come up with some creative way to utilize them and integrate them into our life or our practices or even our economic gains or whatever, you know, that just to give them value because they really are valuable.
Thank you for your time this morning. I really appreciate it very much. Good luck in your trip.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And good luck out in the woods.
Okay, I sure will.
Katrina,
thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Katrina Blair is the author of The Wild Wisdom of Weeds, 13 Essential Plants for Human Survival. We'll take a quick break here. We'll be back right in after these important announcements.
Vermont Community Loan Fund borrower and Vermont business owner Bob Light talks about the Vermont Community Loan Fund.
When my wife Lee and I wanted to expand our Hollister Hill Farm bed and breakfast and to expand our farm store, we looked around for a loan. Traditional lenders weren't interested in our business plan. Then we heard about the Vermont Community Loan Fund. The loan fund looks at lending differently. It isn't just about the bottom line. It's about building Vermont's future, Vermont's businesses, and jobs.
The Vermont Community Loan Fund is a mission-driven lender. We focus on people, not profits. We're lending money to Vermont's small businesses to help them succeed.
The loan fund really looked at the whole picture with us. They saw how we were an asset to Vermont. Now, we're growing and proud to contribute to what makes Vermont work.
If you're looking for a business loan, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, where we look at lending differently. Visit investinvermont.org.
You probably know that unexpected health care costs can really add up if you don't have insurance. Vermont Health Connect would like to remind you of another good reason to get insured before open enrollment ends on February 15th, the Federal Shared Responsibility Payment. If you don't have health insurance, you'll most likely have to pay a fee at tax time. And the fee is set to go up every year, which means going without insurance is only going to get more expensive. The best way to avoid these fees is to sign up for health insurance during open enrollment, which is going on now through February 15th. And here's another good reason to look into Vermont Health Connect. Nearly 9 out of 10 Vermonters who have already gotten enrolled got financial help to make coverage more affordable. Need some help getting started? Go online to vermonthealthconnect.gov or call 855-899-9600 toll-free to see if you qualify for financial help, compare plans, and get connected with a Vermont Health Connect navigator in your area. Time is running out to find the plan that's right for you. Visit Vermont Health Connect online, give them a call, or meet with a navigator today.
We'll take your phone calls the rest of the way this morning. Love to hear from you at 244-1777 is our local number in Central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Coming up next hour, I want to talk a little bit about there's a big controversy going on in the national scene about vaccinations and the wisdom thereof, this coming on the heels of this measles outbreak. We can also talk, I want to talk a little bit about this piece that appeared earlier this week on Monday, yesterday, in the Washington Post about the possibility of Senator Bernie Sanders running for president. Maybe you have some thoughts, comments you want to share with us on that. And also, I thought we had an interesting discussion we started yesterday, which we can certainly pick up and continue, about why it is that we as humans view those with mental illnesses differently than physical illnesses. And a couple of theories came out yesterday, one of them being fear, that when we look at those that are different than us, that we fear that thing might happen to us. Though, I have a little difficulty with that theory because I think we worry about people who are ill, and we don't want to, get ill too. So I don't know whether or not that theory actually holds. So maybe you have a thought or comment or two that you'd like to share with us on that. And you can reach us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. Give them a jingle today for outstanding internet service at very reasonable prices. And if you're a customer of Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom, please do talk with them about bundling your services together into a handy-dandy affordable package. You can reach them at 1-888-321-0815, 1-888-321-0815, and they're also on the web at gmavt.net. Always a good idea to take a peek at that webpage before you give them a call. You may have an answer or a question or two answered. You may even come up with a couple more questions as a result of looking at it. So again, check it out at 1-888-321-0815
and on the web at gmavt.net. Coming up on the program tomorrow, we'll kick off the discussion with the Auditor of Accounts. Doug Hoffer will join us. He's been raising some interesting questions of late involving ski areas, liquor stores, and also printing the cost of medical procedures. So we'll have a lot to talk about with the auditor coming up on the program tomorrow. Keep your dial right here. We got another hour to go. Love to hear from you. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, 96.5 in Berry and Montpelier, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is coming your way next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley.